Let's play a game. On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. Don't even think about it. Just name it. One, two, three.
Velociraptor. Who's your favorite weightlifter's videos to masturbate to?
Ilan.
If you were a chick, who's the first guy that you would do?
Ed Cohen. What?
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
You want to go do karate in the gym?
Each other. I got a really bad feeling about this.
Hey, everybody. I'll give you a second to compose yourself because I'm sure you're laughing your ass off right now at what you just watched. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, and this is a new and improved episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Joined as always by Marvelous Max Montana, the notorious MAX. As you can tell, we have a banner, we have microphones, they're plugged into a mixer, things are getting pretty fucking serious around here. So today we're going to be talking to you about training for the Super Total. But before we get into that, a quick thank you to our sponsors, Virus International, for all your tight man pants and woman pants needs. Use Jug for 10% off from them. Grind Sports Nutrition. Jug 10 for 10% off. Great supplements designed by Dr. Mike Israetel. Trifecta Nutrition, the official meal prep provider of Team Juggernaut. You can visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut.
I think is it a backslash or a front slash?
I don't even...
This one.
Yeah.
And Pints and PRs. It's a lifestyle. So we're very excited to be able to do all the episodes now are going to be coming to you via video, as well as the audio episodes, which you can find at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and on the brand new thejuglife.com. So go check that out.
It's unfortunate we weren't able to get the video set up when Schwarzenegger was here, but that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. That was a part of his contract.
Audio only, I believe.
Yeah.
He may come to you from behind a curtain at some point. Who knows?
And we're going to be bringing you new episodes every Tuesday. And since I just said it on the screen, Shorty, video man extraordinaire, he's locked in. You're going to disappoint the people, Shorty, if it's not every Tuesday now.
It's always Tuesday.
So what is the Super Total? Super Total is the combined efforts of weightlifting and powerlifting. So the combined total of snatch, clean and jerk, squat, bench, and deadlift. And the people who have established these highest Super Totals of all time probably should be considered some of the greatest strength athletes of all time. And the top of that list, the biggest Super Total ever, is by our friend, one of our favorites, Mikhail Kaklyev, who made and this is a lifetime total, so it's combined best list.
Aggregate, right?
Yeah, aggregate total, not just from one weightlifting meet plus one powerlifting meet, or, as it would be pretty rare, one Super Total meet, but the best lifts throughout his career combined. Set him up for a 460 kilo, 210, 250 weightlifting total, massive, and then 1,022.5 kilo powerlifting total for 1,482.5. And, you know, Misha's ability to do weightlifting, powerlifting, strongman, Highland Games, whatever he wants, definitely makes him a personal favorite of mine, and I know Max as well.
He's got to be the only guy I bet he's the only man or one of the only men in history to have done a 210 snatch and a 900 deadlift, both in competition. I can't think of anyone else that's done those lifts.
I mean, just the 900 deadlift list is pretty short to begin with.
Under 30
yeah.
men, right?
He's got to be the only one.
Yeah, and then the 210 snatch. If he had done a 260 clean and jerk in a meet, he would be absolutely the only human being ever to do those. Because 260 is more rare than 900 even. Like maybe like 15 guys have done a 260 clean and jerk.
And besides those amazing lifts, Misha was trying to add another
Yeah, so Misha was very interested in Joanne when he came and did seminar up in the Bay Area. There was a lot of Misha hitting on Joanne quite a bit. I believe he noted that while he is married, he doesn't have a wife in the United States. So, and Joanne's not married in Russia. I guess the rules are different there.
It's the area code.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. So,
great guy.
Max went to a seminar with him and Checo up at CSA, and then a few days later they were down here. So we hosted, Boris Checo, Mikhail Kuklaev, and then Yasha Khan was there.
Oh, yeah, he was there too, right?
And it was the last one of their stops here. So we went out to dinner. It was like me, Dr. Mike, all the Russian guys, and a couple other people, and. Yeah, they wanted to celebrate being done with the seminar tour. So we're at Cheesecake Factory, and Misha didn't seem to grasp the concept of, like, you know, this is sort of just a family restaurant. Because he tried to order a bottle of Grey Goose to the table.
Right.
And in case you're wondering, Cheesecake Factory does not do bottle service. So he then just sort of was like, just 18 shots. Okay.
He did the same thing when we went to Outback Steakhouse with him. He ordered about 18 different shots. In fact, immediately after the seminar concluded, he brought me into the office and started giving me shots of vodka and Gatorade. And he was like, this is how I do it. Huh? And just that was what his, you know, we just started drinking.
Was Misha familiar with the term Faderade?
No. Well, I'm not sure I am, actually.
It's those vodka and Gatorade.
Oh, combined. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, Misha, awesome super total.
Yeah.
Awesome guy. He broke the then-established world record of Mark Henry. Mark Henry is just a phenom, and I think someone that a lot of strength coaches and strength enthusiasts look as maybe some unrealized potential.
Yeah.
That he had, you know, 1,060 kilo total in wraps in, you know, what was the equivalent of the USAPL at the time. And, you know, deadlifted over 900 pounds when he was maybe 21, 22 years old. And then put a 400 kilo weightlifting total with that. And it was like 6 months into weightlifting, he was on the Olympic team.
Yeah, he didn't train a lot in weightlifting.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's a lot of what may have been for Mark Henry with the move on to professional wrestling. Obviously a great financial move. For him, yeah. So I can't really knock him there. But he comes in second with 1460. Then it was a very long-standing record before Mark Henry with John Cole, the guy who I really looked up to getting into powerlifting because he came from a track and field background, was a national champion in the discus, as well as an Olympic hopeful in weightlifting. He made a 363 total to put with his 1,085 powerlifting total for 1448. And then, you know, some other kind of all-time great crossover athletes would be as like Ken Patera, Bruce Wilhelm, you know, Paul Anderson. And I think some of Paul Anderson lifts are a bit dubious.
Yeah, we don't know exactly where. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, who knows exactly what they were?
Yeah.
You know, squatting trash cans on the beach equals 1,200 pounds. I mean, not saying they didn't, but it's very hard to, you know, they're all sort of. Not as verifiable as some of the other guys are.
Yeah. And then even more modern guys who maybe not trained specifically for either or for both sports or for either sport necessarily. People like Klokov certainly could make a huge super total. Clarence Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, snatch Wesley Smith.
I think Joe Doobie probably would be on there too.
I'm guessing I
don't know what his best press was, but I'm sure he bench pressed more than he pressed, and that's got to be close to, you know, maybe 180, 200 kilos, something like that. I mean,
I'd have to look it up again. I know he was the first to clean and press a couple of significant weights.
He was very, very strong in the press, and his squatting ability was incredible, so he would definitely have a good powerlifting total.
Best 17 RM ever.
Best 17 rep max, for sure.
So now we've talked about, you know, what is the super total, who are some of the best all time, it becomes a question of, you know, how do you train for it? I think it's something that's very appealing to a lot of people. is trying to excel in both sports, in weightlifting and powerlifting. I think Max has got a bit of a unique background in this, as he's been involved with the sport of weightlifting for 20 plus years now. But most people came to know you, you know, on the internet, at least more as a powerlifter.
Yeah.
But so you've competed in weightlifting, you've competed in powerlifting, you've coached both very successfully with American record holders in weightlifting, all-time world record holders in powerlifting.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you see in common in the training for weightlifting and powerlifting?
I mean, obviously strength is the biggest factor there. I mean, the foundation of weightlifting is going to basically be powerlifting type, you know, type training on some level. You're going to do squatting and pulling and some kind of overhead strength, but, you know, there's bench pressing for sure. I think almost every lifter most of the weightlifters with Team Juggernaut do some kind of bench pressing except for, like, Pomp, just because it would be really a not conducive situation for him because he's already so,
If Pomp does one push-up,
yeah,
he gets just, a pump. Yeah. I would not be able to rack it clean for a week.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But, you know, like strength is a basic foundation, and then what you're doing is training those general qualities early in the training cycle anyways. So it is conducive to that point. The branching off of the two, you know, is where they kind of start to differ when you start to peak for powerlifting or weightlifting. But for the most part, the general training is very similar for both. And you know, the strength that you develop in powerlifting is going to transfer well to weightlifting. You see a lot of them cross over. Obviously, as you get more advanced in both, it becomes, you know, it's rare to see guys, you know, this list we have here is really short because it's rare to see people that are extremely good at both. And it generally comes from a really unique person who's really, really good at both.
Yeah. Shane Heyman is someone who...
Yeah, he would actually have a really good one because he had a very big powerlifting total.
Yeah, it's single-ply lifting, so right. It's harder to include on
this
list.
Yeah, I guess it's important to mention whether or not you're wearing equipment when you do a squat or a bench or a deadlift. Yeah. It might make sense. You might want to explain what the actual circumstances in which you were lifting those weights were.
Oh, that's an interesting concept.
My uncle once lifted 5,000 pounds. He was in a forklift. But he did. So, yeah.
How old was he at the time? Youth, it junior, was, masters?
Oh, yeah, no.
Senior
he,
forklift.
He was a senior. He was a senior, yeah.
Very
It was an international forklift that he did it in. It was a Husqvarna, I believe, was the brand.
Yeah, definitely. The squatting and pulling, I think that's probably why more weightlifters crossing over to powerlifting have had success, because squatting and pulling make up such a foundation to weightlifters,
yeah.
While snatching and clean and jerking don't make up any foundation to powerlifters. And, you know, I'm a perfect testament to the longer you do powerlifting, you just lose all your athleticism.
Yes, yeah, you get, like, stiffer and slower. Yeah. I will say that if you start with weightlifting, and most people that have done weightlifting to any like moderately successful level or you know, decent weightlifters, competent weightlifters, can cross over to other sports really easily, I feel like. And that's just an observation. I don't think there's data to prove that, but you take a weightlifter who was decently good, national championship level, top 10 nationals level, and they could walk into a powerlifting meet and do fairly well. They could hold their own in the squat and deadlift. They'd obviously probably not be great at the bench, but, you know, that's an easy transition. Whereas powerlifting, you might not be able to find anyone in the top 10 that can, you know, make the transition easily to do that. And it's obvious because the general training for weightlifting is basically powerlifting. But
some, you know, to that effect, though, some of the most successful American weightlifters of all time are converted powerlifters to weightlifters.
Very true. Caleb Williams.
Mark Henry, Shane Heyman, and Caleb Williams.
All three, I think, I don't know if Henry held the record, but Hammond and Williams both held American records.
Yeah, and Caleb Williams, I mean, Mark Henry and Shane Heyman both crossed over when they were young, early 20s.
Yeah,
Caleb Williams, though.
Very successful. Junior IPF world record squat.
Yeah, like six, wasn't it some like six-time sub-junior and junior champion.
Yeah, just a really, really good competitor. Yeah. He told me he ran the 4.4 40 in high school, but he was too short. And there's hand time, but...
Yeah, those high school 40 times get to be a little bit dubious.
37 yards.
That's the multiply powerlifting equivalent of 40. You just ran 30.
30, then you kind of guess the extra.
But he was a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy, so you add a little bit less.
Well, Caleb is a good guy, though.
He actually is a great guy.
Speaking of Caleb Williams and Super Totals.
Oh, shit, yeah. That's funny.
Caleb's going to be hosting a meet in Atlanta in July called the Five Bar Showdown. Caleb, along with Josh Rohr, and Josh was the meet director for this past USAPL Nationals. They're going to be holding a meet in Atlanta, the Five Bar Showdown, in which we'll have a couple athletes competing.
Yeah.
Two of which will be competing with all five bars. That will be James Townsend.
Two guys, five bars.
James Townsend, Louis Arnold, who are...
They are very strong.
Most of you are probably familiar with James, Young Tony M on Instagram. If you don't know who I'm talking about, the strongest, most ripped person ever.
Yeah.
If you ever see a guy on Instagram with 18 abs, that's James Townsend.
Yeah.
Especially if he has 18 abs and is also front squatting 500 or jumping on like a 65-inch box.
Yeah, he is just insane.
Yeah, he's a real asshole.
Yeah.
Because... In between that 500-pound front squat and 65-inch box jump, he probably ate three Big Macs.
Yeah, yeah. And but to boot, he's a real jerk of a person, too. He's unbearable to be around.
But Louis Arnold, super strong guy who Max coaches for hybrid stuff and a grid competitor. And then Kristen Dunsmore is going to go out there.
Oh, really?
Just for the powerlifting part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Marissa going to do both?
No.
She did some snatches the other day.
No, she's too depressed about me being so much better than her. She can't continue.
What about CWS? Super Total Wesley Smith coming in.
Yeah, I'll just be coaching.
Okay.
It's like 2 weeks after we get back from Worlds.
When is this?
July 8th, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But looking forward to that. So that'll be a good time and I'm sure we'll be talking more Super Total when that comes around.
Jug Life Podcast would like to thank one of our favorite sponsors, Virus International. Virus is the official compression gear and singlets of Team Juggernaut Weightlifting, and we are always happy to have their support and for you guys to support them. So please use Jug, J-U-G-G, for 10% off your order from Virus International.
But so the squatting and pulling, a lot of similarities in the training there, and going to be big carryover. In conflict, though, and I think what makes it so challenging for the people to be successful in both, even though both are about being strong and lifting the most weight as possible for a one rep max. And we have another YouTube video, the differences in powerlifting and weightlifting training, that goes into this idea more in depth. But it's going to be, the technical qualities. The powerlifts are relatively simple technique compared to the weightlifting movements. But so much of it is going to have to do with the flexibility required, the mobility required to get into the positions, the speed qualities that are necessary for weightlifting, not necessary for powerlifting, and maybe that powerlifting really hinders up to a point because just max squatting, max deadlifting. The hypertrophy work that's going to be beneficial to powerlifting that maybe doesn't have as high a carryover to weightlifting, it's going to diminish some of those speed qualities. Like I said, I come from a track and field background, and when I was a senior in college, harken back to about 2009, I weighed 290 pounds and had a 35.5-inch vertical. I was very, very fast. Now I weigh more than 290 pounds, an undetermined amount more, and have... less than a 35.5-inch vertical, an undetermined amount less. And so that's not just the jumping part that I'm concerned with, the landing part. If we could, slide a crash pad under.
If there was a ball pit, you'd probably get back up to that 35-inch, for sure.
But a lot of that, it's if you don't use it, you lose it type of scenario. And if I would have kept pressing, pushing on box jumps and that kind of stuff throughout my powerlifting career, I probably... would be able to jump higher than I could now, but it's a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
That a 700-pound squat made me have a really high vertical, but a 900-pound squat You know, just had to train too much slow, heavy stuff.
That's the really the big thing, the big kicker on the two main things that are required to be very good in powerlifting. You have to have a very good bench press and a very good deadlift. I mean, you obviously have to be good at all three, but for the most part, if you can't pull well or bench well, you know, you're kind of in a bad position because you can't make up all that in one lift. You can't make it up with a giant squat. You can have a decent total with one really big lift and the other two kind of falling behind that. But in weightlifting and what you're talking about, like diminishing returns, what's going to take to develop the largest possible deadlift and a very, very strong bench press are two things that training is going to be somewhat of a hindrance to weightlifting. And the degree to which that is for everybody is probably going to be a little bit different, but it's the more you pursue those two numbers and improving those, the more you're going to see the weightlifting stuff suffer, right? Yeah. So
where the bench press is really coming into conflict with the weightlifting movements is in how it's going to limit the athlete's overhead positioning, their overhead mobility and movement. Now, if you would imagine Eric Spoto, let's say, trying to do an overhead squat, when he's just so hugely muscular in the pecs and shoulders, he's not going to be able to get an overhead squat, let alone with his 25-inch arms and 21-inch forearms, he'd be racking a clean maybe at his eyes.
He couldn't even get it close to there.
But it's great for huge bench pressing. Yeah. So those are going to come into conflict. The deadlift, I think, is a little bit more nuanced and maybe a little bit more confusing to people because they see him do clean pulls and snatch pulls, and they think, to the layman, well, the first pull of a clean is a deadlift, or that's going to have a really high carryover, or that weightlifters would be great deadlifters. And it's just not the case. It's not the case for several reasons. The speed qualities and the tempo and timing of it is going to be one, but the positions are different. A clean pull, the first pull of a clean, is not a deadlift.
Yeah.
Max, can you talk about maybe how the deadlift could be disruptive?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing you have is time, right? The deadlift is much, much slower. The positions are different. You're going to want to have a lot more of the pressure or the distribution of your body weight in the wrong position for weightlifting, where in weightlifting, the pull is essentially establishing and setting up the position, the initial pull off the floor, setting up your position to have a good explosion at the top, because the final velocity of the bar is going to be, the higher the final velocity of the bar is, the more conducive that is to getting under the weight. Being really, really good at getting under the bar is key to being successful in weightlifting. In powerlifting and the deadlift, you're setting yourself up to be in the best possible leverage, the best possible position to continue applying force to the bar with the greatest mechanical advantage. So getting your shoulders back behind the bar, keeping your hips a little bit higher, keeping the bar closer to you or closer to your center of mass at the start. Those things are not conducive to setting yourself up to have an excellent position at the top of the pull, to have a good explosion so you can get great bar velocity at the end. So you kind of – positionally, it's very different. You're going to get stronger doing deadlifts. If you did a bunch of deadlifts and had a 700 deadlift, some of that general quality is going to transfer well to weightlifting, but not in a specific way, not from a standpoint of being matching or mimicking those same positions. So the transfer training is low on that regard.
I think that's something important to understand about transfer of training and specificity is that it has a point of diminishing returns. If we had to pick who could clean 150 kilos without knowing anything about them besides their deadlift, of course I would pick the person with the biggest deadlift.
Yeah.
If that's the only information we have.
Without a doubt.
But there's a reason that Eddie Hall and Benedict Magnussen aren't going out and winning Olympic medals, besides that they, do a different sport. But deadlifting 1,000 pounds, a very simple, simplistic understanding of it is they deadlift 1,000, they're gonna be able to pull on 500 so hard and so fast that they can probably clean it.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't manifest itself as the case at all.
It just doesn't,
It's where you could get a guy like Badad Salimi or
right.
Yeah, Lovchev or anyone like that. And, I mean, Lovchev could probably deadlift maybe 800.
Maybe. I would be curious. I mean, I'm sure he's done 800. It's hard to say because some of those guys are very, very strong, mm-hmm. and they're really good at pulling, and they're in – like, I was kind of surprised that Klokov had – he said he had, like, a 350 – or, like, 340, 350 deadlift, so, like, 770. Yeah.
But saying it and doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think Vasily is stronger.
Yeah, Vasily's got – I mean, it was videos of Vasily picking up 300, 350, but, like – or 300, 330, maybe 340. But that's, I mean, for a 230-pound guy at that level, and a very strong deadlift that's comparable to his level in weightlifting would be somewhere in the range of 800 plus.
Yeah.
And it's unlikely Vasily would pull 800
and even
from the ground.
Someone like Lovchev, you know, with the 264 clean and jerk, or I guess not anymore, but
yeah.
Even though he may have the ability to deadlift 800, it is not something that he's actually doing.
Right.
So it's
right.
not something that he needs to do to be able to clean and jerk 264 kilos. And I think, you know, people, especially U.S. powerlifters, powerlifting coaches, have misrepresented this idea of necessary general strength levels for weightlifting or the correlation of what are actually general strength movements and confusing them for being special strength or
right,
high
much.
Transfer movements.
Yeah.
That you don't need to front squat 600 to clean 400. You don't need to deadlift 800 to clean 500.
Yeah.
Those, you know, we have, the U.S. has tons of people cleaning 400. I mean, thousands of people.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of them...
I don't know of any weightlifters currently that front squat 600.
Yeah, I mean...
I think the kid in North Carolina is doing like 260.
Yeah, Dave did maybe 270?
No, Garcia did 260, I think.
Yeah.
Garcia did 260.
And he had cleaned 220.
Yeah, and he...
For,
very
484.
Strong, very strong.
Way, way over,
yeah.
over 400. I mean, just to clean 182, Colin can power 180.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's hard to – if you don't have some kind of – there's a much bigger discussion, the transfer training and specificity in these things. But understanding it's just because you throw a baseball a lot and you're really, really good at throwing a baseball doesn't mean you could turn around and then suddenly throw a shot put very well, because it's very different. The same would be the opposite. If you throw a shot put very, very far, does not mean you're going to turn around and throw a baseball very, very fast, right? Despite them seeming like very, very similar things, there's probably some transference.
Let's even maybe say like a javelin and a baseball.
Right, a javelin and a baseball, right? Yeah. Two very, very similar things that are happening, but they look very similar from the outside, and you would think, well, if you're good at this, and you may be good at throwing one or the other just because you're good at throwing an object, right?
Might be pretty, you know,
the
you
general
might be
skill.
Elite in throwing baseball and pretty good at javelin.
Right, or football and javelin, whatever it is, right? Okay, I can see where there's some transference, but that's about as far as it's going to go, is that your ability, just your general skill, your general ability to throw an object is about... That's it. That's probably the transference. Weightlifting, powerlifting, very similar in the deadlift, right? Being able to pick up something very, very heavy will transfer well to pulling against a barbell very, very hard, but not much more than that in terms of being able to maintain the position, timing, the coordination, intramuscular coordination. All of these things are going to be very different.
Yeah, and the same as continuing to push to be an elite javelin thrower when your goal is throwing a, you know, being elite baseball pitcher is going to have diminishing returns. So it might get you good, you know, better than the average, but is you have to pick higher transfer exercises.
Right.
The Jug Life podcast is brought to you by Grind Sports Nutrition. Grind Sports Nutrition was developed by the minds at Juggernaut and Renaissance Periodization, and we are proud to fuel the world's hardest working athletes. Use Jug for 10% off your order from Grind Sports Nutrition.
So, you know, we've talked about what's in common, what's in conflict. Let's get more into the practical of, you know, how do you set up a plan for the super total? and how would someone go about competing in both sports simultaneously? And I think the first thing that needs to be done is you need to assess the athlete that you're working with. So you have more or less three options. You have someone from a powerlifting background with little to no weightlifting experience. I guess four options. You have someone with a powerlifting background with little to no weightlifting experience, someone from a weightlifting background with no formal powerlifting experience, but they've definitely done squats. They might have not done a lot of regular deadlifting, right, but they pulled a bunch of stuff off the floor. And then you have someone with a balance, equal experience in both, and then you have someone with no experience in either. So assuming the balanced experience and the no experience neither kind of puts you in the same place.
Right.
But if you have someone with more background in powerlifting and less in weightlifting, that's a bit the more tricky one to deal with. Someone who has an abundance of weightlifting experience but very little in powerlifting should take to the powerlifting very quickly. It's going to be pretty straightforward what they need to work on. They're going to need to train the bench press as much as they can without compromising too much their overhead and rack positions. And then they're going to need to train the technique of the deadlift. And they're probably going to be better suited. I think this is a good rule of thumb for a lot of people, is if you're trying to do weightlifting and powerlifting simultaneously, to train more with the sumo deadlift than the conventional deadlift, because it's so distinct technically from the first pull of the clean or snatch, you aren't going to have this trouble of running into the two sort of disrupting each other.
Right.
Setting up for a clean and your body thinking like, oh, this feels familiar, this is like a deadlift.
Yeah, yeah.
Or vice versa. As well as a lot of people with more extensive weightlifting backgrounds are probably better suited for sumo deadlifting anyways, because they're very strong in the legs and the hips relative to their back strength, or their body proportions. A good body proportion for weightlifting is probably better suited, which is going to be these short legs, long torso, short arms. I mean, short arms isn't good for any kind of deadlifting, but the short legs to longer torso would be better for sumo deadlifting than for conventional.
When I started powerlifting, I tried pulling conventional because I assumed I would be pretty good at it, and I was very uncomfortable, and it was just really awkward, and later I found out I'm just shitty at it anyways. But I mean, for the most part, it's a lot more. The rhythm is different, the timing, the setup, all of those things are very different than a clean or a snatch. The tempo, everything about it, the position, the start position. When I tried sumo first time, I think I pulled like a 30-pound, 30 pounds over what I'd ever done before. And it was way more comfortable and felt way more like a natural kind of movement for me. Obviously, my legs are much stronger than my back and stuff, so it's much easier to establish that would be a smarter approach anyways. But, for weightlifting, I would say, especially if you're going to go back and forth between the lifts, unless you're comfortable enough in a deadlift or doing a clean deadlift or something like that, that you're going to switch back and forth, then, try sumo. Because the other thing about sumo deadlifts is it allows you to train it a little bit more frequently, I believe, than a conventional, because the SRA curve is going to be a little bit smaller than with a conventional deadlift, where your low back is going to take a much much bigger beating. The sumo is a lot more involved, uses the legs a lot more, and you can just get away with a little bit more of it. And in addition to doing sumo, you could actually continue to do sumo deadlifts and snatches and clean and jerks, I think, more together because of that factor. So,
yeah, and because the sumo deadlift is a bit more, let's say, reliant upon technique, mm-hmm. or someone with exceptional technique in the sumo can overcome maybe less strength than someone who pulls conventional. And what I'm really saying is that sumo is cheating. Is
accurate statement.
But they because they can train it more frequently, along with the weightlifting training, they can put more attention towards just like pure technical work at a bit more submaximal loads.
Yeah.
While they train the pulling muscles in the weightlifting movements and maybe more general strength exercises, but whether that can set up well for him. So I think what challenge we're really looking at tackling is the powerlifter, or someone with more powerlifting background,
right,
how they can begin to implement more weightlifting.
I think actually all the groups are in a good position. If you have no training background, you're really in the same position as if you have a lot of training, right? So those two groups are kind of excluded because you have to start somewhere, and it doesn't really matter where you start because you're either really good at both or you're not good at either, so you just start somewhere, generally with weightlifting. For the person who comes in who has an extensive powerlifting background, going to do some kind of super total or hybrid training, that person is in a decent position because they don't have to do a lot of bench pressing. They already have – they have good skill. They have probably built up some level of ability in the bench. And they're going to be comfortable within the deadlift. Their backs are probably going to be somewhat strong from doing deadlifts of some kind. The two areas, though, the squat and deadlift, are the ones they're going to have to learn to modify. If they haven't done a lot of high bar squatting or front squatting, that would be the first place that they're going to make some kind of progress. They're going to have to learn the weightlifting movements, and it's always a bit tricky to take somebody who's very, very strong from training and teach them weightlifting versus somebody who's just very, very strong kind of, you know, genetically or naturally they come in with a lot of, you know, strength. That person's going to have to start by learning the positions, learning the technique, practicing the movements, going, you know, spending a lot of time, a lot of volume on those lifts, but it's going to be pretty light because they're not going to spend a huge amount of time.
And with that added volume is, of course, you know, you can only do so much work and it's got to balance. They're going to have to take a step back, particularly from the bench press work, because the problem that most people with more extensive powerlifting backgrounds are going to have is they can't get into good overhead position.
They're jacked.
Yeah, their pecs and their shoulders, you know, limit them from that. Maybe they're also their internal rotators, like their serratus and lats are really tight. Maybe their tricep is really tight, and it's hard for them to get in a front rack position. And the, you know, you're not going to keep pushing the bench press hard and fix those problems as well. So you're going to have to take a step back on the bench press to be able to work on those positions. And it's going to take, you know, dedicated time for stretching and movement drills and all that stuff, you know, potentially doing a lot of heel elevated work. So, I mean, being in weightlifting shoes plus elevating your heels on top of plates, and that could be necessary in the front squat as well as overhead positions.
Yeah.
But just getting comfortable in the overhead position.
Yeah, and then also ditching the low bar squat. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people train a low bar squat a lot. They train it most of the year, almost all year. You know, that would be something that would be the first thing to go because it's just not gonna be conducive to weightlifting. And you know, the amount of energy that goes into it, you're gonna be better off spending that on front squatting and high bar squats, because it'll transfer much more to weightlifting. And then, you know, like Chad said, the bench press is probably the first thing that's gonna be a hindrance in learning the lifts. But a lot of that stuff can be maintained. I mean, a lot of the strength you have is going to be just maintenance levels in those exercises, bench, squat, deadlift, while you're learning the lifts, the Olympic lifts.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe close grip benching is going to be a good option as it's going to be a little less in the pecs, more in the arms, so allow you to still get stimulus for the bench press while you're kind of working better into those overhead positions. You know, the overhead press and you know, push press and jerks are going to have strength stimulus to the bench press. They're not great, and if this was a podcast about how to bench press the most or be the best powerlifter, we wouldn't be talking about jerks, right? So that's an important thing to understand with all of this. Don't think I'm going to train for the super total and be the best powerlifter and the best weightlifter ever. Unless you're Misha Kaklaev, hey, buddy, how you doing? You know, you're probably not going to be. You're probably not going to be an absolute elite level competitor in both. Do it. You're doing it because you think it's a fun challenge to be as good as you can at both of them. But it's a give and take. You know, something has to be taken away from each to be given to the other. So we're going to have to take something away from the bench press there and really dedicate that time up front to the positions. And
yeah, I think that's a big like kind of the big question is like a question. That's like one of the big like aspect of it is like for the most part, training for these things is largely like a lifestyle choice. Like you enjoy the exercise, you enjoy doing it.
It's a lifestyle. It's all a lifestyle.
The overall, like, yeah, it's a fun thing to do. It's not – there isn't really any, like, official Super Total Federation, right? I mean
– not yet.
I mean, SPF, man. They may add it. Slingshot right. Super Total.
Yeah.
With straps. You think they'll do bench with straps ever? But, you know, it's like – it's for fun, right? So realize that, like, a lot of what you're doing is to enjoy it, and most of these recommendations and all these things are based around – what's the best possible solution to that so that you can have, you know, lifting bigger weights is enjoyable, right? I mean, that's the number one priority. So, but also realizing that at the same time, programming it intelligently and doing these things with a smart approach is what's going to allow you to lift bigger weights and have more fun with it. So don't think that it's like I'm going to walk in to do both of these because I'll build them both up and see which one I'm better at. And then when I get offered the sponsorship, I'll just drop the other one.
I did have a YouTube comment question about that one time. I mean, I don't think he was from – it didn't seem like English was his first language, but he was asking about training to be professional in both powerlifting and weightlifting.
I remember this, yeah.
By age 22 or 24
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
I don't think he had done either of them
before. He was 21 at the time.
Yeah. And I don't think he'd done either before, so – it was quite the...
Yeah, that's a hard one. But, you know, I mean, give it a try. I mean, also, you know, a lot of it is going to be... A lot of the Super Total, a lot of that kind of stuff is going to be largely determined by... Probably individual differences are going to play a bigger role in this than they would for the other sports individually or, you know, separately. You're going to have the way people respond to things much different. You know... weightlifters with really strong backs are probably going to have an easier time doing the lifts over and over again and still surviving a lot of the volume that you're going to train with the pulling movements. A powerlifter with very, very strong legs will have a little bit easier time handling the volume of Olympic lifts in addition to the squatting they're already doing, you know, and so forth. People have very strong upper bodies might have an easy time with the jerk. Maybe that's something they don't have to work on as much. So everyone's coming into it with not only the same advantages or disadvantages they would have for weightlifting or powerlifting, but now some of those things are combinations that work well for both sports. Mm-hmm. So it's something to think about. I mean, there's going to be a much more individualized variation on it.
The Jug Life podcast is brought to you by Trifecta Nutrition. Trifecta brings you prepared meals and prepared food that are going to be a great fit for your Renaissance diet or any other diet that you're doing, or if you're just looking for the convenience of great tasting prepared food, visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut to order your food today.
As we get into, you know, the idea of trying to set up, to give you guys an example of what this training might look like, the first thing you need to do is kind of establish a schedule and a longer term plan for it. So we know what's next. And I did this with powerlifting and strongman, training simultaneously, which probably has more carryover than these two. But, you know, I knew if a strongman contest was next, I had to adjust the training. If a powerlifting meet was next, had to adjust the training. The same thing's going to happen here for Super Total, for powerlifting and weightlifting together. So let's say in the year you're going to set up for four meets. Yeah. We're going to do a powerlifting meet, then a weightlifting meet, then a more important powerlifting meet, then a more important weightlifting meet. So you're gonna set up this annual plan with four meets, ideally spread out fairly evenly, you know, 12 weeks apart, you know, 12 to 14 weeks apart, I guess. And within that, you know, these four separate blocks, you're basically gonna have powerlifting priority, then weightlifting priority, then powerlifting priority, and then weightlifting priority. And you want to put the powerlifting first, even if yeah. you are someone with a, you know, a greater powerlifting background, because powerlifting training is going to potentiate the weightlifting training a bit better. Parts of the powerlifting training are going to potentiate the weightlifting training better than the other way around. You know, training hard in the squat and deadlift is going to make you strong, which you can then take that strength and develop the technique and speed qualities later in the more weightlifting prioritized training. But either way, whether you're in a powerlifting focused block or a weightlifting focused one, weightlifting is going to take relative greater attention because the technical qualities are so much more involved, because the speed qualities, because weightlifting is, it's just a harder sport to be good at than powerlifting. It's going to take relatively more energy. So let's say if we're in a powerlifting block, it's maybe, and again, we have to take the person's individual background and their strengths and weaknesses into account, but the powerlifting specific block might be 50-50 powerlifting to weightlifting, or maybe 60-40 powerlifting if you had someone with a more extensive weightlifting background. And then as you get into the weightlifting specific block, that's going to shift to more like 70-30 to weightlifting, maybe 80-20 of your energy going weightlifting to powerlifting. Some of the practical changes that you're going to have to make in that. When you're in the powerlifting specific block, you got to bench press. You got to work on the deadlift. All right. Whether it's probably the most infrequent, hard, heavy deadlifting that you can get away with would be the goal. More technical work. So maybe only one out of every 3 weeks you're pulling up to heavy, single, double, triple, whatever it may be. And then when you get into the weightlifting specific block, the bench press training is gotta take a back seat. The deadlift training's gotta take a back seat. You gotta trust that you're training the muscles of the press, of the bench press and of the deadlift with your weightlifting training. You gotta trust my shoulders and triceps are still getting strong from overhead press, push press, jerk, and my back and hamstrings and glutes are still getting strong from snatching, clean and jerking, snatch, clean pulls, all that stuff, while doing as minimal amount of work with the bench press and deadlift as possible to stay in touch with the technique, but to not disrupt the weightlifting training.
Yeah, for sure. One of the more nuanced portions is how you distribute that volume into the lifts and what's the best way to maximize that. In weightlifting, when if you're in a powerlifting phase, you're training for powerlifting meet, normally in the general phase in weightlifting, you're going to do, or throughout the whole set cycle, you're going to do a lot more volume in the lifts, more repetitions per set, in the snatch and clean and jerk. You're going to have to find more creative ways to be able to do that because the fatigue is going to be a lot greater from all of the high volume squatting, pressing, and pulling. And so, there's got to be an intelligent structure to the week and an intelligent organization of how much volume we're doing. If we're going to do 30 or 40 lifts in the snatch and clean and jerk, for the week, how do we set that up in a way that allows us to get the most out of it without having a lot of interference with the other training, but at the same time allows us to still practice the skill at a high level, right? So we have to, be creative with those solutions. We can't just take standard weightlifting training and overlay at the top of powerlifting training and say, there it is, it's going to work great.
Yeah, and this is going to be, if you're doing a lot of hard squatting and deadlifting, and even if you're if you're just a weightlifter listening to this,
right,
and you have, higher volume or times in your training where you're training higher volumes on squatting and pulling exercises, it's probably going to be a good idea then for your lifts, for your snatch and clean and jerk, to do more work from blocks or more right. work from the hang, as not going from the floor isn't going to be quite as stressful to the back and the legs. Maybe no hook, no feet type right. of exercises that allow you to work the rhythm and the positions, but minimize the load that you can use. So strategic choices like that, when you're in a powerlifting focused portion of the training, to still get good quality work in with the weightlifting movements, but not disrupt the powerlifting too much. As you move into the weightlifting specific portion, I don't think there's as much in the way of like clever exercise selection to make with the powerlifting stuff. You just don't do as much right. or you don't put as much weight on the bar. It doesn't have to be
right. any the total real trick volume to that. Just comes down really.
Yeah.
And only comes down to the level that's below where it would be to excel in those faster than you would excel in the weightlifting. Mm. That makes sense. So you're not going to, you go from pretty really large, more aggressive workouts in powerlifting, more volume overall devoted to squatting, pulling, pressing. Now you're in the weightlifting centered phase or the weightlifting meet you're training for, and those exercises come down. They're still above maintenance level. You still have to be above that that lowest
minimum
effective volume, right? Yeah. You're still above the minimum effective volume, you're significantly above it, without disrupting the Olympic lifting training. Because obviously skill, technique, those things are going to take a precedence initially in those phases, especially as you get closer to the competition. So, you know, it seems sort of one-sided because your weightlifting has to take a precedence. I mean, it's the more complex sport. Powerlifting movements are always going to be involved in that, as would weightlifting movements always be involved to some degree. You know, there's going to be trade-offs here and there, switching this exercise out. We're not going to bench press as we get closer to weightlifting meets. We're also not going to pull heavy as we switch to weightlifting. And then competition time, you know, the focus those last couple weeks are going to be very, very much similar to what a weightlifting training program would look like, and same with powerlifting. As you get closer to powerlifting meet, you're not going to do snatches and clean and jerks those last couple weeks going into the meet because it's just not necessary, right?
Yeah, and it might mean that you do, you know, I think doing like bar warm-ups for the lifts, for, you know, snatch and clean and jerk warm-ups, muscle snatch, overhead squat, that's a great general way to warm up for powerlifting and can keep you, you know, in touch with things just a little bit. It's important to remember with this too, that strength, you know, strength qualities decay much slower than speed and technique qualities. So if you're someone with a big powerlifting background, no experience in weightlifting, you know, do not be overly concerned with taking a month or 6 weeks or 8 weeks to really step back from your powerlifting training to be able to focus on these things that are going to be able to get you in a position to train the lifts. Because, you know, if you're someone like me, and, you know, I did weightlifting stuff, type of stuff many, many moons ago, but
a couple of days ago, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, it can't be. I put a little bit on the gram, but, you know, where I hadn't trained it in a long time. If you want to train, you got to get to the point where you can actually get in good enough positions to put real weight on the bar and to move well enough to execute the technique. So don't be too concerned that, you know, taking 4 weeks or 6 weeks of lesser, much lower volume work in the powerlifts, you're not going to lose it all.
Right.
You might lose a little bit, but it's not going to be nearly as drastic as it may be, or as you may think it would be. But the other side of that is as you've developed those qualities, if you're not from a weightlifting background and you haven't done thousands and tens of thousands of snatches and clean and jerk in your life, that having a time where you don't do anything related to the lifts, if you went a month, you know, if you've been training, you're doing your super total program and you've been doing it great for 3 months. So you've been doing weightlifting for 3 months out of your life, and then you don't do it at all for an entire month. You know what's going to happen when you come back to your weightlifting focus block next?
It's going to be sore shit.
Yeah, you're going to think, what is a snatch? What is a clean jerk? I feel like I've never done this before.
Yep.
So even doing just the bar warm-ups to stay in touch with it, you know, a little bit of front squatting, very, very minimal work, but something to stay in touch with it those last couple weeks into the powerlifting meet is going to be an important part of training for the super total. Early in the training process, if you're coming from powerlifting or no training background in either for this, doing real general coordination drills is going to be helpful, and general speed drills, stuff like high knees, butt kickers, that kind of thing, different jumps, medicine ball throws, you know, all different kind of skipping type of drills, all that's going to be useful in developing general coordination. You know, gymnastics type of stuff, if you have a background there, you're already going to be set up
There's a ton of, like, empty bar, footwork, hand coordination, timing, hands and feet type movement and drills. There are dozens, probably hundreds of them, and many of them I can think of, too, that are also, like, you know, essentially the volume is very, very small, its impact on you. That can be done, you know, probably every single day. Mm-hmm. I mean, without really having any concern for what's going to accumulate there.
And we've talked about that before with technique, and you know, I've talked about it in regards to powerlifting and peaking for powerlifting, that the technical SRA curve is very, very short. So if you've had very limited exposure to it, or just any time you're trying to develop it, frequency, very high frequency of very low intensity drills, like an empty bar, are going to be really useful.
Yeah. Skill acquisition takes more time or takes less time than strength acquisition. So if you're very, very good at the lifts already, if you have that background, it's easy to take a break and come back to it and very quickly regain the skill. Strength acquisition takes longer, so you're going to have to spend time, obviously, no matter what you do, getting stronger throughout both training cycles, right?
Yeah. So as you're looking at, you know, training this for an entire year, and if you want to do super tall stuff, it's not, unless you already have an extensive background in both, it's not going to be a short endeavor to become, you know, strong enough where you're really having fun with what you're doing, besides just, you know, the fun of a new challenge, I guess. So as we're looking at setting up this year and talking about sort of the proportion of work that's going into each, and maybe that first training block is, as you lead into the powerlifting meet, would be something like, you know, 40% weightlifting, or sorry, 50% weightlifting, 50% powerlifting, because you need to learn how to do the lifts. And then you'd get into, you know, you do the meet, then you'd come back into a weightlifting block, maybe 70 to 80% weightlifting to 20 to 30% powerlifting. Then you go into another powerlifting block, and because you've, you know, had pretty extensive time, 6 months, let's say, with weightlifting movements, you could afford to put a little bit less attention to right. the weightlifting. So now instead of 50-50, maybe you're 60-40 to powerlifting, and then coming back to that last weightlifting meet, again, back to the 70 to 80% weightlifting work, 20 to 30% powerlifting. You know, you want to finish up strong on your most important meet of the year before you, you know, start it all over again.
Yeah. The one scenario that in which you do all five lifts at one meet would be a little bit different, in that you're basically gonna train essentially the same as you would for the lift, the meet type that you're probably gonna be worse at, if that makes sense. So if you're predominantly a power lifter, you're gonna train like you're doing a weightlifting meet, because you're gonna need to develop the weaknesses more early in that training cycle. If you're predominantly a weightlifter, it would make sense that you'd be benefiting yourself from doing more general training, more powerlifting type training early going into that meet. So, I mean, there's really nothing super special about doing all of them together. You're just going to pick the sport side of it that you're worse at, and that's the main focus.
Yeah, I would see that probably ending up for most people, whether you're better powerlifter, worse weightlifter, or better weightlifter, worse powerlifter, as probably like a 60-40
right.
weightlifting split,
right.
maybe 70-30.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as we mentioned, so the squatting and pulling, you know, is a commonality between the both. So even if you were just training for weightlifting, if you were just a weightlifter, you'd still be squatting and pulling, which would make you reasonably ready for weightlifting, where if you're just training for powerlifting, there's not too much that's going to help carry over. So I'd say if you were getting ready for something like five bar showdown, it's going to be 60 to 70% weightlifting training with 30 to 40% powerlifting training, making some of those strategic adjustments as you're early in the phase, squatting and pulling maybe up in the 6, 8, 10 rep range, that you're doing the work from blocks and the no hook, no feet to stay in touch with your technique. And then as you approach the meet, you know, training the lifts, the full lifts harder, this full snatch and clean and jerk, while keeping more technical, frequent technical sessions in for the deadlift, but that are lighter. And then, you know, maybe a bit more close grip benching, because, you know, the difference between a close grip bench and a competition grip bench is much less than the difference between a no hook, no feet snatch and a full snatch.
Yeah.
A squat snatch.
A squat snatch. Everyone's favorite term.
Super totals.
Become a super totaler. Is that the word they would use? I guess people call it hybrid or super total.
Yeah.
You wouldn't call yourself a power lifter. I guess that's a combination. Well,
that's the power from powerlifting and the lifting from weightlifting.
Yeah. It's spelled very similar than to weightlifter or powerlifter.
Do you think there's an accent in there somewhere? Maybe one of those Motley Crue two-dot things?
Oh, yeah, an umlaut. They call that an umlaut, in case you're wondering.
Fun fact. yeah, it's a fun thing to do. You know, just doing one of the sports, they get tedious. They get redundant. Like, I mean, I've talked about this before in regards to my own powerlifting training. Like, I get bored with it. And weightlifting is even less lifts. It's only two lifts.
I'm going to say something right. I've seen Chad lift a lot of fucking weight many times. But today, I witnessed the single greatest feat of strength I've ever seen from Chad. He walked over to the deadlift platform.
We're reorganizing some things in the gym.
Reorganizing the gym. He just picked it up. He just stuck his fingers under the plywood, like three layers of plywood with rubber. But it's like rubber that's like a stall mat. It's like heavier than it looks, and it's just so fucking awkward and uncomfortable to touch and lift. And you have to get your fingers underneath the platform between the plywood and the concrete. And he just kind of walks over. First thing, no warm-up, nothing. And bends down and just kind of like grumbles and guffuffles a little and gets his hand under and just picks the whole thing up. And by himself, just kind of carries it over and sets it against the power rack. By far the most impressive strength feat I've seen from Chad yet.
Yeah. You hear that, Uncle Jim? I'm coming for you.
Uncle Jim.
Uncle Jim would have picked up all the platforms at the same
together,
time.
Together. And then moved them and be like, I'm not as strong as I used to be.
I broke one bead of sweat. Ran down my brow while doing that. Yeah. If you want to do the Super Total, very fun. Awesome, awesome challenge. Some of the greatest strength athletes of all time. This is really how they laid their claim to that by doing all this different stuff. So hopefully you learned something in this podcast that's going to help you, work towards this goal. Maybe you'll even see me doing a Super Total. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
You won't see me doing one anytime soon.
So what do we have coming up next? We got a lot of seminars afoot.
Yeah.
This weekend, as you're watching this, if you watch it the day it came out, which you should, we will have a squat workshop here at Juggernaut HQ.
On Saturday.
On the 8th.
The 8th.
Then the 15th, snatch workshop.
Snatch workshop the 15th.
And then we've got weightlifting meet June 11th.
Yep.
Summer
Showdown.
Yeah, Juggernaut Summer Showdown. USAW Juggernaut Summer Showdown. So sign up for that. End of April. Myself, Dr. Mike, Dr. James, Dr. Quinn will be in Arlington, Texas, Juggernaut Performance Summit, talking to you about programming, nutrition, movement, and recovery, really the four big things you need to know to create an effective program. And then at the start of June, Max and I will have dueling clinics in Texas, where I'll be in wonderful, fun, cool Austin. And Max will be in shitty College Station.
That could be the case. I've never been there. I'm not gonna judge it yet. Except the name leads me to believe that any town with the name Station does not reinforce confidence.
Even the Texas A&M kids, when they were here,
they did say it was shitty.
Yeah.
Shitty College Station. Here I come.
Well, it's not Colleen.
That's true. It could be worse.
Got that going for you.
Could be worse.
So check out store.jtsstrength.com under events to sign up for any of those. As well as we offer a lot of online coaching, maybe even for Super Total.
Who knows?
So go to juggernautcoaching.com and you can check out all our different online coaching offerings from club, team, one-on-one, work with me, Max, Marissa, Colin Burns, all kinds of great coaches. As I mentioned a little bit before, very excited that we now have thejuglife.com, where you can find all the podcasts in one place, maybe some bonus content from time to time. I guess probably I'll do some of that. Plus Jug Life merchandise coming. If you're interested in where you can find shirts for some of our great sponsors, like Pints and PRs, Milligrams and Kilograms, Pop-Tarts and Power Cleans, TheJugLife.com is the place that you'll be able to do that. So look for those very soon. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada. You can find me on Facebook. And you can email max@JTSStrength if you're interested in any of the online coaching or find out more details about it. Go ahead and shoot me a message.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTrain on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your newsfeed all day. This has been the Jug Life Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed this new video format, these fantastic microphones, delightful banner. We're trying our best to make it as good as we can for you, improve the sound and all that kind of stuff. If you like the podcast, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us a funny review, and maybe we'll read it on here. We appreciate you all listening and watching. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, the PBS of Fitness YouTube, the best content there is. This is the Jug Life, and until next time.
And that's my thing now. I'm doing these. Okay. I'm doing this till it's not cool anymore.
So why don't you should right, have stopped so I'm done in now. The
that
past.
Was first and last time. Where would someone submit an Oscar nod for our their film we just created? Is it a public thing, or is this? You actually have to do that, or is it not?
I don't know.
Is it? I don't know who does the nom.
If Oscar. Oscar, if you're watching.
Oscar at Oscars.com. That's probably where it is. Yeah. That's probably get to him.
Oscar at AOL.com.
30,000 people can't be wrong, Chad.